This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
This podcast is an unscripted, unedited conversation about true crime. We take the cases very seriously, but I don't take myself seriously at all, and neither should you. Welcome to Wife of Crime.
So, Russ, every single time I research a survivor story, I am in utter disbelief of what these survivors have made it through. In the case I'm telling you today, not only did this woman make it through one of the most brutal attacks I've ever heard, but she used her story to change actual laws and make a huge difference in our world. This is the survival of Ellen Halpert. Everyone, welcome back to Wife of Crime, a true crime podcast where I tell my husband Russ true crime stories and he reacts to them.
What's up, folks? It's your boy Russ, aka the Big Mold.
Aka the Big Mold. And I'm Jess. And I never can think of an aka, to be honest. I think for next podcast, next episode, I'm going to spend the next 2 weeks trying to come up with the perfect AKA.
That's the problem. You're putting too much thought into it. This is just AKA, I think too much. Like, there you go.
So we have a couple true crime updates. Oh, no, actually, first, before we do that, I'm going to say this. So if you guys didn't notice, we popped a bonus episode into the feed last week. It was our, you know, we're bi-weekly, but we decided on one of the off weeks to throw a bonus episode in there because it's something we've been talking about for a long time.
Doing, and everyone keeps saying, go to weekly. And I'd love to sit and talk.
I would too.
If it paid the bills. But daddy needs a new pair of shoes.
Yeah. So we decided.
Oh, I just call myself daddy. I meant it like Papa needs a new pair of shoes when they roll the dice. Yeah, but you never seen that? Like Papa needs a new pair of shoes and they roll the dice on TV?
Yeah, no, I've seen it.
Don't call me daddy.
So we popped a bonus episode into the feed and it got a huge response. People were so into it because we wanted to give you guys more content and we tried to find a way to do it with like more, with minimal research involved because we're just busy with jobs and stuff. So this episode got a huge response. If you haven't listened to it, go to the feed and listen to our episode titled Start Spreading the News.
Yeah, we just talk about a couple news articles.
Yeah, we had a really good time and everyone thought it was hilarious. So it got a really good response. It was pretty funny. Yep. It was a good time. Also, there's a couple true crime news updates. The first one is that there's a development with the JonBenet Ramsey case, possible development. I made a TikTok about it. You can go follow us on TikTok, Wife Crime Pod. And this TikTok got a lot of views because John Ramsey is petitioning the governor of Colorado to get access to the DNA in his daughter's case and send it to CeCe Moore with Paraben Nano Labs, which CeCe had a show, and everyone, I mean, she's a G. Like, everyone, when it comes to genealogy and DNA evidence, this lady is, like, on another level, and she's just solving all these cold cases with her technology. And she really wants her hands...
Maybe I'll interview her for a job at the DNA shop.
Maybe you should.
I'll let her, like, she got to start at the bottom. She'd be, like, my apprentice first, though.
Well, she's really interested in getting her hands on the case DNA from that case.
Well, of course, because if you solve this, that blows up your business even more.
Yeah, that, and this, like, it's kind of crazy. The Boulder PD won't release it. Like, they just won't release it to her own father. I mean, that's kind of nuts. So he's petitioning the governor.
Every time, like, police hold back
evidence, I'm like, well, what did you guys have to do with it then?
Yeah.
Like, why are you hiding it?
Exactly. A lot of people want that question answered. Like, what's being hidden? So anyway, huge developments in that case. Another update, we spoke 2 weeks ago about Jesse Perilla's case, which is a local case to us. We were talking to his family online, and we've been kind of sharing his story on our social medias, on TikTok, on our show. And there's an update in that case as well. They have some people of interest that they are trying to get. The police released their photos, and they really want to bring these guys in for questioning. So we'll see how that develops. The two families of Nikki Huang and Jesse Perilla, their families are happy that the police actually have people that they have named, and they've put their pictures out there. So we'll see what happens with that. So that's another developing thing I'll keep you guys posted on.
Yeah, hopefully there's some justice.
Yeah, hopefully. I have a little bit of a story that happened to me this week. And of course, Russ's words were in my head the whole time. So I've been doing this workout. I've been doing this like workout routine. I've been pretty diligent with it over the last, I would say, couple months. I probably do it like 3 to 4 days a week. And I go by myself near my house to this track. And I was there doing my routine, and there was literally no one else there but me and this man. And, you know, of course, he's looking at me. He keeps walking the track, and he keeps looking at me, and I'm looking at him, and I'm kind of freaked out a little because he's tall and he's older and he's a man. And I'm like, in my head, I'm just like, you know, this makes me feel a little uncomfortable. And I started thinking,
it's a very secluded place.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a public place, but it tends to be a bit secluded.
And I mean, there's definitely cameras all over the place.
There's police in there.
And there's police in there that ride around, and security in there that ride around. But still, you can be alone for a while. So I started getting a little freaked out, and I started thinking, oh my God, I have to bring my pepper spray here now, because, you know, this guy might have been totally innocent just walking the track. But the fact that it was just him and I alone kind of got me a little freaked.
Well, you know what's annoying? We had a conversation about this, and I was like, you have to bring your pepper spray. And she goes, it's dumb, like, women have to do this. You don't ever, like, bring anything with you. And I'm like, well, actually, I run with a pocket knife.
Well, yeah, that's true.
So, like,
but not every man runs with a pocket knife. And
but it doesn't, it's I'm annoying. Not talking about every man. I'm talking about me and you. We're the two people at this table.
Yeah.
And I'll probably never need the pocket knife, but I just have it on me. It's very light.
Yeah.
And it's no trouble bringing, and I don't even notice it's there.
I mean, I don't mind bringing the pepper spray. It's just it gets annoying, and ladies understand.
It's not a woman thing only, though. Everyone take the best precautions you can to increase your chances of being safe.
Well, I agree. So, I was, you know, working out, and in my mind, I was like, the guy's going to walk through this gate that's right next to me. I just know it. I know he's going to walk through this gate. And in my mind, as I'm working out, I thought to myself, you should go close the gate right there while he's walking the opposite direction around the track, so he doesn't see you close it, but then he won't come through that one. Now he'll have to be forced to go through the gate all the way far away from you. And I didn't do it. So of course, what does he do? He walks through the gate that's right near me. And as soon as he did, I pulled out my headphones, I picked up my phone, and I was like, oh, you're on your way over here? Okay, cool. I'm right by the sit-up benches. I'll see you in a few minutes. Just like pretending to talk to Russ on my phone. And he like made eye contact with me and then just kept walking. And I just pretended to stay on my phone the whole time while he walked down the street. And then he went away. And you know what? It might have been totally innocent, but I don't know. It's something that we have to do sometimes. Like, just pretend to get on your phone or carry pepper spray. Just something to keep yourself safe, even though it's annoying to me that we have to do it. So I just thought of that whole situation. And I was like, you know what? I got to tell the peeps on the podcast about that, because sometimes we just have to think of something in the moment to make us feel better, make us feel safer. All right. Well, you have your two jobs.
All right. So what do I got? All right. So I guess we'll start out review of the week.
Mm-hmm.
So it says, shout out to all the corns, 5 stars from Alana Kravitz. This podcast makes me feel like I'm listening to my 70-year-old grandparents bicker about whether a joke my grandfather told was funny or not. With well-researched true crime stories thrown in, everyone says Russ, in parentheses, the mold, will grow on you. But in my case,
Jess grew on me.
Oh.
She does a great job delivering the stories and balancing out Russ's goofiness. However, I have loved Russ's commentary and many questions from day one. It's like watching a movie with someone who doesn't remember who any of the characters are, which is me. The banter between the two is so fun to listen to. I show the podcast to my little sisters so y'all can scare them into being cautious while making them laugh. Thank you for all the work you put into this podcast.
Aw, wow. I grew on somebody. That's interesting. Role reversal.
Yeah, so I read that one because they didn't like you at first.
That is rare.
Yeah, it's normally the other way around.
It is normally the other way around. That's so funny. But it is hilarious that she said it's like listening to her 7-year-old grandparents bicker.
Well, we do bicker.
We have a Patreon. You guys know we are going to be doing on the Patreon this month, DB Cooper. So Netflix came out with a documentary. It's 4 parts, which is actually a lot for Russ. 4 parts is probably hitting Russ's maximum amount that he can watch. But we will be covering the DB Cooper documentary and talking about it for August True Crime and Chill.
Yeah. So these are the patrons. As if you don't know, Jess told you, we have a bunch of episodes over there. If I had to guess, probably like 50 hours of content. And if you hate commercials, you could go commercial free there too.
Yeah, you can.
So here are the patrons. We got Haley, Adriana, Jennifer, Jess, Catherine, Emma, Marky, Sally, Samantha, Tori, Beb and Tom, Ashley, Haley, Brittany, Alex, Jessica, Mauna, Brianna, Marla, Vanessa, Lisa, Amanda, Harry, Lauren, Shannon, Renee, Liz, Josh, Bianca, Amberly, Kel, Nicole, About Three Kims, LaToya, and Tina.
That was funny that you added that in there.
Yeah, throw a little DMX at the end. RIP DMX. So cheers to you guys.
Yay, cheers to you guys. Thank you so much for
appreciate
your support.
Appreciate you guys for the support and encouragement.
Yes, thank you. Very encouraging. It is very encouraging. And I think I'm going to add a little soundbite right before you start of the DMX song.
Yeah, possibly, but imagine you put that on every single podcast and then we get copywritten, flagged or something like that, and now it's a headache.
All right, well, I thought it was a good idea.
If DMX was alive, I hit him up, like, yo, D, could we use that? He'd be like, yeah, you my dog. And I'd be like, bet.
That was a really good impression of him.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Well, as you guys know, this has literally been the hardest year of our lives. 2023 really kicked us in the ass, and it has been tough, I'm not going to lie. I've spoken many times about the fact that I started therapy in 2020 after COVID, and it has been life-changing for me. I don't think I could have gotten through this year as well as I have without the tools that I learned and gained through my therapy sessions. Russ and I are a prime example that life throws curveballs. And if you're in a place right now where you feel like you need some tools that could help you deal with any curveballs that are thrown your way, I highly suggest you give therapy a try. Over the last year, we've partnered with BetterHelp to give you 10% off your first month. So head over to betterhelp.com/wifeofcrime1 to get 10% off. You can use promo code wifeofcrime1. And like I said, give it a try. See if you like it. It's all completely online. You just answer a questionnaire and they will match you with a therapist, and you can change therapists at any time. BetterHelp.com/wifeofcrime1, promo code wifeofcrime1.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay, we really needed a Survivor episode this week. It's been a little while since we've talked about a Survivor story, but in my Rafiki voice from The Lion King, it is time.
And I don't think I tried to do it. I don't know Rafiki.
Rafiki, the monkey?
I was in The Cult.
Where he goes,
and I think it
is time.
I think my mom didn't like The Lion King because she thought they were trying to portray the lion like Jesus or something. Like he was.
Oh, geez, really?
Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
And there was probably like a car. So Disney probably threw one cartoon penis in there or something somewhere hidden.
They did.
In. They did?
Well, no. There's like a whole thing about Disney throwing penises and stuff. Like in Little Mermaid and everything, there's like a whole conspiracy. You can go down to YouTube and Reddit rabbit hole about penises in Disney movies.
Yeah, but my mom probably didn't like it. I don't know, probably new age. Maybe it sparkled or something. I don't know.
Well, in my Rafiki voice,
it is time
for a survivor story. Every time we do a Not Me, Not Today episode, I am so in awe.
They're my favorites.
Yeah, mine too. I'm so in awe of what the human body can endure. Like, I say it literally all the time, I know, but humans are so fragile, yet at times so unbelievably resilient. The story I'm telling you today is about the survival of a Texas woman. And we have a lot of Texas female listeners, so a lot of them might identify with her.
And they all got pistols in their purse.
Yes, they do.
I wonder if anyone has like a rhinestone pistol.
I bet they do. I bet some of our listeners.
I think my mom had like a pink pistol. She moved to some state where not everyone had teeth, but they all have guns. And I think like they let her get a pistol right away. I was like, you should not let her get a pistol. Are you crazy?
Well, today's story is about a woman named Ellen Halbert. So not only did she survive one of the most brutal attacks I've ever heard, but she also went on to use her story to change local and state legislation. She even took her story to Congress with hopes to change federal legislation as well. She has spent her life after the attack working with victims and with perpetrators.
The perpetrators?
It's very interesting.
Well, maybe she could get an insight to their minds.
Or she could give them an insight on what they do to people. I'll tell you what she does later. She is truly a light in this world, and I'm so in awe of her story, and I'm so happy to be able to tell it, honestly, because what she went through is completely remarkable. There is a trigger warning here. People were really upset with me when I told the Tika Adams story a while ago. It was a few months ago, and I didn't give a trigger warning. What this woman went through is absolutely horrendous, and I'm telling you all the details, so you've been warned. This is the case of Ellen Halbert, a.k.a. the Ninja in the Attic case. Are you ready?
Yeah, ninja.
Yeah. Ellen was in her 40s, living with her husband and two teens in Austin, Texas, in 1986. She described her neighborhood as like a very safe suburban community. She says she lived in a house in the hills. So to me, it seems like it was a relatively wooded area. On the morning of August 28th, Ellen, her husband, and two kids left for work and school just like any other day. But what they didn't know is while they were packing up their cars, you know, leaving for their day, there was a man hiding across the street watching them leave. He was a drifter by the name of Troy Eugene Wigley. Troy was 18 years old.
Sounds like a clown name. He's Mr. Wigley.
Yeah. Well, Troy was 18 years old, and earlier that week, he got into a confrontation with his brother that became very violent. So he packed a bag, hopped on a bus, and just happened to get off the bus he was on right in Ellen's neighborhood. So after seeing that the house was empty, Troy broke into the house. He went up to the attic to hide, and he stayed there all day and night hiding in the attic.
Me.
I know. It reminds me of the Daniel story. Damn Daniel. We talked about Daniel LaPlante, 2 years ago probably, where he was hiding in the walls.
I kind of remember that. I might have to listen again.
Yeah.
You know, but that reminds me of like when my dumbass is home and I am like, you know, I check the house or like if I left the door open or Jess left the door open. Like when I go check behind the shower curtain and I was like, what would I do if somebody was there?
It's true.
You know what I would do? I'd pass out. Like, what would you do if you open the shower curtain and someone's there?
I don't know. I'd probably kick him in the face. Did you ever see Ferris Bueller's Day Off? Oh, you didn't.
No.
You're the worst with movie references. Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
No, but if you have any world star hip hop references, I'm always getting over.
Well, in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, his sister kicks the principal right in the face when he pops out, and it's hilarious.
Yeah, I don't know what I would do. I mean, obviously, I hope I'd fight. You know, hopefully I have sneakers on because sometimes your socks are slippery.
That's true. Your socks are slippery on hardwood floors. Very true.
You'll be sliding through the house like Tom Cruise in that movie when he's like sliding through with his t-shirt on.
Oh, there's an 80s movie reference.
Look, yeah, but I don't
you.
Know. I never watched that movie.
Risky
and I don't
business.
Know you just see clips of it, you know? And I hate Tom Cruise.
So after seeing that the house was empty, Troy broke into the house and he hid up there in the attic all day and night. On the morning of August 29th, Ellen's husband left for a golf trip, and their kids went off to school. Ellen stayed home alone. She got up, did her normal thing, drank a cup of coffee, you know, read the newspaper a little bit, then decided to get in the shower. After she got out of the shower, she grabbed a towel and she started walking into her bedroom to go into the closet to get a robe. And out of the corner of her eye, she sees someone hiding in the corner of the bathroom.
Oh my God.
It was a man dressed in a ninja suit. How creepy is that?
I'd be like, are you tripping? Like, if someone's in your house, you don't think it's going to be a ninja.
Not only do you not think someone's going to be in your house, but then you see a man standing there in all black. The only thing you see is his two eyes. That's all she saw. He had on black gloves as well, and one of his arms was high above his head, and in his hand was a huge knife.
Ugh. So I have a question. So being that you're, you know, you're an experienced ER nurse, you always hear these things that it's better to be shot than stabbed or vice, you know, like, is there something like you're more likely to survive from a stab or a shot?
I would say no, not in general. It all depends on where on the body you get hit.
Okay,
with
so that's
a
like
knife
a room.
or with a gun. Yeah.
And does it matter, say if you have a knife, how deep the knife goes in?
Like, absolutely.
Like how far is too far?
Well, it depends on what organs are there.
How far under your skin are your organs?
I mean, I would say probably about an 2 inches, but it depends on which organ you hit, first of all.
Okay.
You have two kidneys.
Well, see, people, I ask that question of the length of the knife, because when you get a knife for self-defense, make sure it's at least 3 inches then, because it has to be
It has to be able to penetrate, because
don't use your knife for anything except self-defense or, like, fidgeting.
Well, obviously, we're talking to adults here, obviously.
No, we have kids.
Well, yes, but it depends on where the knife goes, what organ it goes into. Obviously, if you're penetrating the lungs, that's going to put someone out pretty quickly.
And how deep are your
heart,
lungs in? Like a few right? inches?
Well, if you stab someone on the shoulders, the top of the shoulders, that's the top of the lungs. So you could probably get to it pretty easily by your clavicle.
That's crazy. I feel like that's what Chuck Norris would do if he was going to stab someone.
Yeah.
He definitely would stab you.
Like through by the clavicle all the way deep in.
It's like, ah.
Okay, so we're back in the bathroom. Ellen sees this guy with a knife over his head dressed in all black. And all she sees is his eyes. And she says at first she was just in shock. Like she froze for a second. Then she went through kind of a roller coaster of emotions pretty rapidly. She said at first she thought it was a joke. She actually laughed for a second.
Maybe like, oh, my husband's here?
She's just like, there's a ninja in my bathroom.
That'd
like she literally laughed to herself for a second. But then as soon as she started laughing, she got really scared. And she's like, oh, no, this is a nightmare. Okay, wake up, Ellen. Come on, wake up. This is a nightmare. But then he starts screaming at her. Get on the ground. And he started coming after her. She tries to fight him off, but he grabs her. And then he backhands her in the face and knocks her to the floor. She got right back up and he backhands her again and she fell on the floor. But she got right back up again because she said, I'm not going to stay on that floor. Because she knew, like, if she's on the floor, she's at her most vulnerable position. The man was blocking the doorway and he had a knife in one hand and he had a hammer in the other hand. And she kind of had nowhere to go. He was cornering her. Aside from this, she's also naked.
Well, she was naked?
Well, she just got out of the shower. All she had on was a towel. So she's cornered in her bedroom. She's naked with only a towel on. So she sits on the edge of the bed and she hugs her knees trying to cover herself up. And she just starts begging. She's like, look, I'll give you anything. Just let me go.
I feel like the hardest thing to do is probably to fight naked.
Of course. Yeah. So he walks over to her and he drags the knife across the top of her feet. And he says, my knives are 10 times sharper than your knives. And she didn't really understand what he meant by that, but I think he was trying to intimidate her. Then he grabs her and he forces her down on the bed and ties her ankles. And then he ties her hands behind her back. He tells her to put her head down and close her eyes. He takes off his mask and ties it around her eyes. So now she's bound ankles and wrists and blindfolded. He says, you know, it's a shame you can't see me. I'm half black and half white, and I'm very handsome.
That's crazy.
That's insane, right?
Yeah.
He starts pacing back and forth in the room, asking Ellen about how much money she has. He says, how much money is your bank? Your house is beautiful. It must be very expensive. You have a lot of money, I guarantee it. You probably have money in this house. Do you have a safe in here? You're a rich person. Of course you have a safe. Like, just going on and on talking about her money. So she starts trying to negotiate with him. She's like, okay, cool. I'll write you a check. Any amount you want, I'll drive you to the bank. I'll clear out my bank accounts. I'll give you every penny I have. Just please don't hurt me, but I'll give you everything, all my money. And he told Ellen he had been hiding in the attic and he'd heard everything that they spoke about and everything they did the previous day and night. He knew her husband and sons weren't going to be home today.
Damn.
And he said he planned all of this. And he said, you know what I'm going to do next? And she said, what? And he goes, I'm going to rape you.
Ugh.
Imagine that. So she starts begging him, please don't do this. And he said, no one will ever catch me. It doesn't matter. No one's ever going to catch me. So he told her to scoot back on the bed. She wouldn't do it. And he starts screaming at her to scoot back on the bed. Then he grabs her and he forces her down on the bed and then rapes her. Then he reties her ankles together and goes in the bathroom and takes a shower. So now Ellen is laying on the bed, still blindfolded, still ankles and wrists bound. And he's in the bathroom taking a shower. And she says, like, you know, I went through all the scenarios in my head. How could I actually get out of this situation? All I can do is hop. Do you think I could hop fast enough, blindfolded? Because I can't take the blindfold off. My hands are bound. Could I hop to the top of the stairs? Then once I got to the stairs, how am I going to get down the stairs and like get out of my house before he catches me?
Without making so much noise.
Exactly.
Hops make noise.
And she's like, he's going to automatically kill me if I try to get away, right? She decides it's safer for her to actually stay put. Maybe she can try to negotiate with him. Maybe she can try to convince him with her words. So he got out of the shower. He puts his ninja suit back on and then comes back into the room. So he cuts her hands free and he takes off her blindfold. He shows her a check that he wrote to himself for $600. $600.
He thinks that's rich?
He thinks that's a lot of money. It is 1986, but still, $600? Seriously?
You know who else thought $600 was a lot of money in 1986?
Who?
5-year-old Russell.
So $600 is a stupid amount of money to be putting this poor woman through this trauma over. But she notices the name on the check. It was made out to Troy Wigley. So she signs it. And she remembers that name.
Wiggly piece of shit.
So after this, he grabbed her again. He held her down. He tied her hands again. And he holds the knife to her back and forces her to hop into the bathroom. Okay. Then he tells Ellen to get on her knees. And she listens to him. She gets on her knees and then he pushes her head into the floor like she's in the fetal position. And then all of a sudden, she feels a horrible pain in her head because he starts beating her in the head with the hammer.
Oh, shit.
This forced her onto her side. And when she fell onto her side, he then stabs her in the left side of the chest, aiming for her heart. He then hits her on the head with the hammer again. Then he takes the knife and he stabs her two quick stabs in the back of the neck. In and out, in and out. It's a miracle he didn't sever her C-spine, seriously. Then he takes the knife. This is insane. This is crazy. He takes the knife and he tries to force it through her skull, through the top of her head. But he wasn't strong enough to get it through. So,
oh, this is getting tough.
He takes the hammer and starts hammering the knife into her head.
No.
Yes.
You should, I guess this is triggering me.
So he decides he wanted the knife back out. And he grabs it and he can't get it back out now. So what he does is he takes his foot and he steps on the back of her neck and head and uses all of his might to pull the knife out, to yank it out. And he can't get it out. So she describes it that he was wiggling her head around like a rag doll. Trying.
She was awake?
She was alive. No, she was feeling and experiencing this entire thing.
That's crazy.
And she tells her story.
Because people get punched in the face and be out cold. He's hitting you in the head with a hammer and shit. How aren't you knocked out?
She wasn't knocked out. So he was shaking her head around like a rag doll, trying to get this knife out, putting his foot on her head to have leverage. Finally, he yanks the knife out of her head. And Ellen says she starts going in and out of consciousness at this point.
Probably bleeding like crazy.
Yeah. She hears him moving around. So she slowly lifts her head to look and see where he is. And he screams, "Put your head back down!" Because I think he is like, oh my God, this lady isn't dead. I've just hammered a knife into her head and she's alive looking for me.
She's the fucking ninja.
And now he's freaking out. So he came back into the bathroom and he hit her one more time with the hammer on the head. And Ellen wasn't dead, but she knew he wanted him
dead. Maybe play dead.
So she starts to play dead at this point. Despite the agonizing pain that she's in, she's just laying there trying to play dead. He came back over to her and he grabbed her left hand and tried to pull her wedding rings off and they wouldn't come off. And he's yanking and yanking and yanking. And in her mind, she's like, oh my God, I'm trying to play dead. If he wants these rings, he might cut my finger off to get them. And so she prays to God, God, please help me. Please help me. And the wedding rings just came off on their own. So at this point, Troy left the bathroom. And she just laid there, playing dead, for multiple minutes. She's trying to hear for him. Did he leave? Is he just waiting around the corner for me? But she knew she was losing a lot of blood because she started to get really, really cold. And she knew if she didn't get help soon, she was going to die on that bathroom floor. So she says to herself, look, I can't just lay here anymore. You're going to die. You got to go try to save yourself. Whether he's here or not, like, you're this close to death at this point. You might as well fight. So she decides to fight for her life. And she was incredibly weak at this point, so she couldn't stand up. She starts using her arms because, remember, her arms weren't bound at this point. He had cut them because he was trying to get the wedding ring. So she uses her arms to try to drag herself out of the bathroom. And she drags herself with her arms, like scoots pretty much, like an army crawl kind of vibe, through her bedroom into the hallway.
So she can't walk on her feet?
No, she's too weak to stand up. She's lost so much blood and she has multiple head traumas.
That's crazy. I feel like it's probably harder to drag yourself with your arms than it is to walk.
I don't think so. I think it's harder to stand up with all that blood loss and then hop. So she slides on the floor. She gets to the top of the stairs and she's like, all right, I'm going to have to just slide down the stairs. So she turns around and slides all the way down the stairs. She then gets into her living room. She crawls into her living room like army crawl.
Wait, is he still there?
No, he's gone at this point.
Okay.
And she gets to the phone on the table because, you know, this is the 80s. So there's a phone in the living room sitting on the table. It's a landline.
Probably a rotary phone at that.
I don't think it was a rotary phone, but it was a landline phone.
I'm sure they had a nice house.
So she couldn't really see because all the blood was in her eyes, but she has muscle memory. So she grabs the phone and she knew where the numbers were on the phone to dial her parents' number. Her parents only lived 3 minutes away. So she dialed their number and you know, told them she's hurt, come over, and they ran over to her house. Thank God they were home. She said her parents ran in the house and she was passed out, but she was woken up by the sound of her father screaming at the top of his lungs. Her father, which to me is just like gut-wrenching.
I wonder what she said to her parents. Maybe just help?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like you can't talk much.
She says she doesn't really remember. She was in and out of consciousness at that point. Her father, screaming, he immediately calls 911. And at this point, she's totally out of it. But she heard the EMS tell her parents they didn't think she was going to make it to the hospital. And in that moment, Ellen said she didn't have enough strength to say anything, you know, with words.
But I know what she said.
But in her head.
She said, not me, not today.
That's what she said. She said, oh, you bet I'm going to make it. Not me, not, she didn't say not me, not today, but for us. Not me, not today. Of course I'm going to make it. And she not only wasn't going to let this dude take her life, but she was going to make sure that he got caught.
I bet sometimes that keeps the people alive. Like, I'm going to get justice. Like, you know, you need something to live for.
Like, remember Alison Botha, one of the craziest stories of all time? She wrote the killer's names in the sand as she was dying. And she wrote their names in the sand.
I remember that, but I don't remember what happened to her.
If you guys don't remember,
go back and listen to.
Yeah, I mean, she's one of the most absolute insane survival stories I've ever heard.
That's the one where
heard.
They cut her head?
They did
cut her head. All right, I remember that one. Go ahead.
So police show up on the scene, and as she's being loaded into the ambulance, Ellen musters up enough strength to say to the police, his name is Troy Wigley. It's literally all she could say.
But that's good because, God forbid, you don't make it.
Yes. That's why she found all the strength inside to say it in that moment before she went to the hospital.
Oh, man. Imagine if that was her last strength she had.
I know. So she's rushed to the hospital and immediately into surgery. She received more than 600 stitches, spent days and days in the hospital, and had multiple reconstructive surgeries of her head. But let's talk about this real quick, because to me, being a medical professional, like, this is absolutely insane. She was stabbed in the chest. It went through her breast, but it missed her heart.
So it's probably good if you got stabbed in the titty instead.
Yeah, it went
because there ain't nothing in there.
Went through her boob, but it missed her heart and lungs. She was stabbed 2 times in the neck, like I said, but it missed all her large arteries. You have a carotid, you have a jugular, you have all these arteries here in your neck. Missed all of them, missed her C-spine, so she wasn't paralyzed. She was stabbed in the head, and then the knife was hammered into her head.
This one cringed me to that. I don't want to hear that again.
And she did not sustain a serious life-altering traumatic brain injury.
Yeah, that one cringed the shit out of me when the knife in the head.
It's truly a miracle. Like, it's a miracle. So Ellen moved back into the house where the attack happened. She got a security system.
She lives there. Where are you going to go?
I mean, if attack like that happened in my house, I'd be like, I'm moving. I'm not living here. This is like serious PTSD. I would have a really hard time coming back to the house where that happened.
No, I guess I'd prefer to move. I don't know.
She got a security system, and she said she felt okay living there because in her mind, it wasn't the house that did it to her. It was the man that did it to her, and he was locked up. He got caught that same day.
Oh, right away?
Yeah, police got him.
How the hell did they catch him so fast?
Because they went to the bank where he had a check.
Oh, what an idiot.
Made out
He's
to him.
So such a dumb piece of shit.
Yeah. She went through months of head surgeries. She was bald. She went to therapy to receive help for her PTSD after being raped and brutalized. And unfortunately, her husband, he didn't stay with her.
What?
He wanted her to get over it way faster than she was able to. She had a shaved head. Her face was all scarred and distorted. Her head was scarred and distorted. And he was cold towards her. Not affectionate.
She said this?
Yeah. And after a few months, they separated and eventually got a divorce.
Well, you know what? Better off you find out before you're super old that this is the type of person that this person is, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it sucks that he wasn't there with her, but at least she found out his true colors.
She had a huge support system in her parents and sister, though. They helped bring Ellen back to life. They helped her with all the scars. They would rub ointment on them. They just physically took care of her and emotionally took care of her. And they were a huge part in her healing. After some months, Ellen decided to attend a support group at a local rape crisis center. And she started talking about her attack and listening to other survivors' stories. And it's helped her process her own trauma. And she even says to this day, like, the more you talk about it and the more you get it out of your, like, get it out of your head and talk through it, you slowly heal.
That's very interesting. I wonder if everyone's like that. Like, it seems therapy is good for a lot of people, you know, talking about it, getting it out. But for me, when I talk about things that I went through, I feel those same feelings again. When I don't talk about it, I just let it go, I feel better.
Yeah, I mean, so talking about different. It,
you know, and everyone's therapy is a must, but maybe it's not for everyone.
No, it can be different.
But it seems helpful for everyone that's ever been through it.
I mean, yeah, I think therapy is helpful for a lot of people, but it might not be everybody's cup of tea.
Yeah, like, I don't want to talk about that. I'm fine.
But for her, it helped her heal, and she's a huge proponent of telling her story.
Yeah.
So her attacker, Troy Wigley, you know, like I said, he was caught right away and he was brought to trial within 3 months. So they went really fast with him. Ellen took the stand to testify in front of him.
He probably was like, how the fuck is she alive?
Well, he just stared at her with no emotion the whole time she spoke. And he was sentenced to life in prison.
It's too good for him. But, you know, you want him to suffer, but he's probably so cold of a character that being in jail is not even suffering for him, because outside his life was shit. He thought $600 was rich.
Well, he's tried to get parole multiple times. And every time, you know, anytime someone tries to get parole, the victims have to come and testify or write a letter. Like, they have to be part of it, you know? And he was denied parole in 2006, in 2018, and then just recently in 2021, he tried to get parole again, and he was denied again.
Now, is life a term, like 20 years is life, or is life, like, he just can't get out?
Well, he keeps getting denied parole, so if he wasn't denied his parole, he could get out, but they keep denying him, so he's probably there until he dies.
I hope something bad happens to him.
So she said it was empowering for her to face him.
And if you listen to this episode with the phone you snuck in your butt, I hope something bad happens to you, really bad.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
But I can't put bounties of calling cards on people no more.
True.
People said, Rush, you got to stop doing that.
Yeah. So she said it was empowering to face the perpetrator and to be part of the process of getting him locked up. It made her feel like she took the power away from him, that she had the power now. Her testimony is what put him away. And she loved that. It made her feel good and powerful. Ellen started speaking publicly about her attack and started going to different support groups, talking about her story. And she met her now husband, who was also a survivor of a brutal attack. They met each other at a support group.
What was his? Do you know anything about
him? I don't know anything about him, but I know that they met and fell in love, and now she is with a man who's absolutely wonderful, and they have a wonderful marriage. And now they're in their 70s. They've been together for 20 years, and or over 20 years, and they're super happy together.
That's nice.
So she started speaking publicly about her attack, which led to volunteering for victim services, and then eventually she landed a spot on the Board of Criminal Justice, and she was appointed to this position by the governor of Texas. And she was the first and only victim of a violent crime on the board, which is crazy to me. Ellen started a program of her own called the Ellen Halbert Unit in Burnett, Texas. And it's a female treatment center that focuses on substance abuse treatment and PTSD treatment for women in prison. And then she also took her story to Congress. And this was really interesting to me. So in 1994, the Violent Crime Control and Law Enforcement Act, aka the Clinton Crime Bill. I don't know if you remember this, but the Clinton Crime Bill.
Bill Clinton?
Yeah. It was passed in 1994. And there were a lot of provisions.
Isn't that where, like, a lot of people went to jail for weed and stuff?
Yeah. So there were a lot of things about this bill.
Yeah, let everyone out who just, like, went to jail for a little bit of weed. What the fuck's up with that?
Yeah. Well, there were a lot of things about this bill that are very controversial. Some provisions in this bill were really good. Some were really bad. But Ellen, in 1997, spoke out against this bill because it addresses crime from the back end. And it encourages more convictions and incarcerations than crime prevention. And that's like her biggest thing is, why aren't we preventing crime from the childhood? Why are, like, her, one of the things in her speech that she says is Troy Wigley wasn't born to be a rape and murderer. He became this way. Why are we not putting money and effort into trying to do things for children, like after school programs, and putting more effort into things to get people off the street and get people out of bad situations so they don't grow up and commit violent crimes?
Yeah, I definitely understand her point, but then I understand the lawmaker's point where how we're preventing this is we're letting them know that the consequence is so huge, you ain't getting out. So that's their preventative measure, which doesn't seem to be working. And I don't think anything's going to work. You can prevent some crime, but the world's crazy and there's a lot of crazy people out here.
No, it's true.
Well, there's no right answer. Everyone thinks they have a right answer, which always is super annoying. Like, how about we just all do our best to try to prevent crime and, oh, I have this idea. Or, you know, maybe if someone is gainfully employed, they feel like they have some self-worth. Let's train people to have a skill.
Well, that's what she was talking about.
When you're good at something, you know, you feel like you could accomplish something.
Well, this bill is controversial for many reasons. It gave prisons $9.7 billion in additional funding, which can be good or bad. It has a provision called the Violence Against Women Act, which is good, but it eliminated higher education for inmates, which in my opinion is bad. Others may not agree. So there are a lot of things about this bill that were pretty controversial.
I don't know how I feel about, you know, the college and jail stuff. You know, if it, I could see the good and the bad in it, you know, all the resources that are spent on it. But if it gets these people out of jail and,
productive
person in society, because especially if you're not in jail for a violent crime.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. If you're not in jail for a violent crime.
Like, if you were just trying to make money and trying to figure it out, you hustled, you did whatever.
Yeah. You sold drugs or something.
You know, some people sell drugs. People, oh, you shouldn't sell drugs, get a job. But, you know, some people sell drugs. That's all they know. I know a lot of people like that.
Yeah. So,
and they're good people.
So it is a controversial thing. I'm going to play Ellen's speech that she did on Capitol Hill on July 4th, 1997. It's like 3 minutes long, but it's super powerful. And it's really very interesting to listen to.
Okay.
Good morning. My name is Ellen Halbert, and I'm from Austin, Texas. And I'm here this morning with this group of crime survivors and police and prosecutors to speak out about the crime bill. This bill focuses entirely at the back end of the system, at more money for prosecution and more money for punishment, with barely an afterthought at the front end of the system where we ought to be making our enormous investments, which is in crime prevention. We ought to be making investments in preventing crime from happening in the first place. I was a victim of a violent crime. In 1986, a man, an 18-year-old drifter, spent the night in my attic. And the next morning, when everyone had gone, he surprised me as I was getting out of the shower. During the next hour and a half, I was raped, stabbed four times, beaten in the head with a hammer, and left for dead. Now, the man that did those things to me was caught, and he was tried, and he was put in prison for a long time, and that's where he ought to be. But it doesn't undo at all what happened to me. And I don't believe it had to happen. I don't believe that man was born to rape and murder. I believe that by the time he was 18 years old, that life him and turned him to the monster that he was. And I believe that if Congress had consistently through the years put the money in with the kids, with prevention programs, in our greatest asset, I wouldn't be standing here today. Research shows us that kids who are denied early childhood programs are five times more likely to get in trouble when they grow up. Why aren't we funding them? they work. Research shows us they work. Research shows us that battered and abused children are twice as likely to grow up and do those same kinds of things themselves. And yet the programs that we have to work with families that can stop child abuse from 50 to 80%, why aren't they being funded? We know that kids get in trouble between 3 and 6 o'clock after school every day. Why aren't we pouring money into after-school programs? Well, Congress is turning its back on funding prevention programs that work. And by focusing all of the money and all of the attention on the back end, we are leaving the door wide open at the front end for the creation of more and more and more victims just like me. More families torn apart by violence, devastated by crime. If Congress doesn't do what they need to do by providing money for prevention programs, Congress is truly turning its back on America. Thank you.
So that was her speech. And I feel like I can't say anything. She's the one who is a survivor of an incredibly violent crime. And if that's how she feels, she's the best person to talk about stuff like this.
I think it should be done both ways. You know, there should be consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And we should also try to help underprivileged people. You know, not all underprivileged people that go through bad things end up this way. So maybe there are certain people that can become this.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certain people that can't become it no matter what. Like some abused dogs, you beat the shit out of a dog, it becomes vicious. Some dogs, you beat the shit out of them, they just cower.
And I know. I'd never be like beat that. Anybody's dog.
No, if anybody touches a dog in front of me, I'll beat the shit out of them.
Yeah. No, but it's true. And I think it is a balance. It's all about a balance. And I think that she would agree with that, too. Later on in her life, after this whole thing with Congress, she went on and actually would mediate, which is crazy. She would mediate between perpetrators and victims. So there are actual perpetrators and victims of those crimes that would agree to meet with each other. And they would talk about why the perpetrator would tell the survivor why they did what they did. The survivor would tell the perpetrator, you did this to me, and now this has been my experience since then. And she would be a mediator for those things. She actually met with a mediator to try to speak with Troy Wigley.
Oof.
But she wouldn't do it because the mediator went to see Troy. And when he asked him, you know, why did you do what you did? He was just so cold. He was just like, because I wanted to. I mean, he was like such a dick about it. And she was like, nah, I'm not meeting with
you
him.
You know what?
Like, that's it.
I prefer them to be cold. And
what do you mean you prefer? That's a weird way to say it.
I prefer them to be real. Like, I'm a cold piece of shit. Instead of come out, you know, I'm so sorry. You're sorry because you got caught and you were in jail. But if you could have kept going along killing people your whole life and being rich or whatever you thought you could get from this. Like, tell the truth. Who are you?
Oh, so you just want people to be honest.
To be real.
You don't think that people go do something bad and then regret it later?
Well, because Jesus is locked in cell B in D block. You know what I mean? And all of a sudden they go into jail and the Bible opens up and they see the light.
Okay,
no.
But there are people who probably regret what they did.
I don't give a shit because you only regret it because you probably got caught.
No, that's true. I mean, I'm
had you not got caught and you kept living your life outside and you committed crimes here and there, screw that.
Yeah,
I don't come out saying sorry.
Well, she decided not to meet with him.
I guess
she
you should
said,
say sorry if it makes the person feel better.
Yeah,
but you know what? Nobody. I don't want to hear shit you have to say. Screw that.
So if someone hurt you or hurt me or whatever, you wouldn't want them to apologize if they later regretted
it? No, I'd like to meet them in a room alone.
Well, yeah.
No matter what age, I don't care if they were 90 and they hobbled in.
Yeah, I know.
Like, oh, let me just meet them alone. We'll have a good talk. We'll paint the walls. I paint houses.
Oh, God. All right, Irishman over here. Well, Ellen has made such an impact on so many lives using her story. She has really used this mess and made it her message. And it's so inspiring to me.
That's a good saying. Make the mess a message.
Yes. I got it from a preacher, actually. So her biggest piece of advice to survivors is to just keep talking about it. And I know we talked about earlier, some people want to talk about it, some people don't want to talk about it. But
Is it not talking about it just moving on too, though? So there's, I think everyone has to do what's good for them. It's an individual thing.
It is an individual thing. But she believes that her talking about it and listening to other survivors is what helped her heal. And that's the amazing survival of Ellen Halpert.
Wow, Ellen, you made it.
Yeah, she's amazing.
And crazy story.
It was crazy. And I'm so in awe of her story.
I wish worse happened to Mr. Wiggles.
Yeah, I know. I mean, he's in jail for the rest of his life and he keeps getting denied. So hopefully they'll just keep denying his parole, honestly. Well, you can always follow us on Instagram at Wife of Crime Pod and Facebook, Wife of Crime, the Crime Family, and Patreon at Wife of Crime Pod and TikTok at Wife of Crime Pod. And we will check you guys later.
Go buy some dope-ass merch at wifeofcrime.com.
Oh, yeah. Do that, too.
I rock my stuff. You know, I'm a corn.
We do.
It's so corny. It's like freaking, like, if you have a band and wear your own band's t-shirt.
Yeah, it is. But whatever. I don't care.
Yeah, no one knows who I am. Except you guys.
All right, everyone. Have a wonderful week. We will catch you later. Bye.
Peace.